I'm Gary Null. Always nice to be able to share an empowering hour with you. This program does not concern itself with your ideologies, your politics, your race, your culture, your wealth, your education. Everyone is invited to sit at this table. We believe in the unification of all human life. Look for the truth, wherever it is, and share it. Today you'll see that truth because we're going to start with health and nutrition with brand new information on how you could reduce the risk of cardiovascular death by 22% with just one nutrient. Now, of course, imagine if you incorporated other lifestyle modification, such as a healthy plant-based diet and exercise, good stress management, and taking nutrients like magnesium, potassium, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, L-carnitine, cayenne, tocotrienols, also into heart-healthy regimen, then you could reduce your risk of cardiovascular death almost completely. There's some new information that I read. I want to thank Michael Downey over at Life Extension for doing that research. It adds to all the other research that we have. Now, this nutrient is called glucosamine. Gluco, G-L-U-C-O, N-S, glucosamine. Amine means amino acid, A-M-I-N-E. Now, for those of us in the health field, we've been using glucosamine to help people who have problems with joints, and especially cartilage, because it helps to rebuild cartilage, especially in older people. There's been some recent research that shows 22% lower risk of cardiovascular death when you regularly use glucosamine. And how this came about is, I was discussing recently on this program, autophagy, A-U-T-O-P-H-A-G-Y. Autophagy is the ability to cleanse out cellular debris, the senescent cells, the waste metabolic byproducts that accumulate through normal living. And unfortunately, unless you're really attentive to things like, am I drinking my green juices that help detoxify the body, the liver, the kidneys, the bloodstream, the cells? Are you taking a high enough fiber, a variety of fibers, fruit fibers like blueberry and raspberry, which are very soft and do a soft cleansing, and then more firm fibers, such as your grain fibers, brown rice, quinoa, teff? Or are you taking apple fibers, also very good? Most people don't think about this, but this is what helps kind of take a vacuum cleaner inside the cell. Recently, I was speaking with a friend, and this is a friend that I met at the beginning of my career. She was already a well-established person in her field and highly respected, multi-Emmy award-winning producer, one of the top at ABC. And she talked about what happens in life when you forget to pay attention to how to honor this day in every way. Things accumulate. You know, suddenly your attic, your basement, your garage, your closets are overflowing with stuff. Stuff that might have been important one time, not today. And I mentioned to her that I have a process. The process is simple. Every day I make sure that I make my bed really tight, really neat. She said, why? I said, simple, because if I start off being very conscious of that bed, then everything else I can do that day follows that same stream of conscious mindfulness, that if I'm going to brush my teeth, brush them properly. If I'm going to clean something, clean it. If I'm going to dust my room, I'm not just going to dust what I see. I'm going to dust under the bed, behind the curtains, take a wet cloth over the window blinds, etc. You know, if I'm going to wash something I'm going to eat, I'm going to thoroughly wash it, so I don't get something going into my body, a parasite or bacteria that's on the skin that frequently happens, by the way, very common with avocados, things that people don't take, well, they don't think about, they take it for granted. Oh, I'll just peel the avocado, make a salad. Great idea. But remember, when your knife blade cuts through that skin, any almost microscopic, almost non-seeable bacteria could go then onto the flesh of the avocado, and this has happened, and people get food poisoning. And we're a country that has a big problem with hygiene. For some reason, we're just not into hygiene. We don't wash our hands. We don't wash our fingernails thoroughly. Not even doctors, nurses, and orderlies. If you saw the statistics on bacteria and infections and viruses spread in hospitals, you would be amazed, especially when you see the bill you get. In any case, a part of this concept of autophagy is keeping our cells clean, keeping the debris out. And if you exercise, that helps. Drinking a lot of water up to your body needs, that helps. But also vitamin C helps it. Your green vegetables helps. So this is the way you do it. Now we can add a superstar to help get back into the beneficial autophagy that allows you to live a longer life. I would suggest 1,500 milligrams a day. That shows that you can confer these enormous benefits not to die from heart disease. Okay, 1,500 milligrams a day of glucosamine. And remember, if you have arthritis, if you have joint pain, I've had people who were told absolutely positively you're going to have hip surgery, knee replacement, and they did not because they went on a proper protocol. And although glucosamine is traditionally used for osteoarthritis, this is showing a big difference. They studied 466,000 individuals without a history of cardiovascular disease, and they were followed for 7 years. And those who used the glucosamine had a substantial 22% reduction in death. And but glucosamine does a lot of good things in the body. That's just a couple of them. And it also causes what we call an AMPK activation with induction of fat metabolism, mitochondrial activation. It's activation of the sirtuins, and all these are repairing, cleansing, and helping your body. All right? So that's just on that particular topic. But there are other things as well that we should pay attention to. We also know that that if we want to be really healthy, we should consider bringing into our body what are called Cistanchi, C-I-S-T-A-N-C-H-E. It's been found to trigger death of colorectal cancer. And preclinical research suggests that Cistanchi may help fight cancer in cells of the esophagus, breast, colon, liver. But here is where I believe that we have to understand what it does. It stimulates the immune system, increasing the levels of cancer-fighting CD8 T cells. And Cistanchi inhibited the growth of liver cancer cells and greatly improved the survival rate in the rodents in this particular test. And scientists use species with short lifespans, including fruit flies and roundworms, to test the lifespan effects of compounds. Well, common sense says that if you have a study, quality study, that shows that using a single nutrient has anti-cancer effect on one type of cancer being tested, why wouldn't it also impact other cancers as well? And so that's why when you are concerned about stimulating growth hormone, when Cistanchi can help provide a natural way to promote youthful growth hormone levels, that's important. It has a lot of other benefits for longevity. And it has a natural immune-stimulating properties too, especially at a time when people want to get a healthy immune system. So Cistanchi, by the way, is an herb. It's been used for a long time in Chinese medicine to treat common concerns of aging, including weakened immunity and heightened inflammation. And for those of you in this audience who have someone in your family suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, this is really important because Cistanchi brings down neuroinflammation, inflammation in your brain and nervous system. So its anti-inflammatory activity puts it right in there as a great way of helping prevent damaging effects of neuroinflammation. In fact, there was a placebo-controlled pilot study of men and women with moderate Alzheimer's disease. They just took 300 milligrams three times a day for a year. And taking Sustanci resulted in significantly lower levels of certain inflammatory factors in the fluid surrounding the subject's brains and spinal cord compared to the untreated group. In fact, untreated subjects also had hippocampal shrinkage, while the Sustanci group had no change in the volume of the hippocampus. And by the way, you want your hippocampus to be healthy because that's where your cognition, memory, and learning occur. And so I think it's very important. Again, let me just spell it so if you didn't get it first time, you get it this time. C-I-S-T-A-N-C-H-E. And it's just very important for our immune cells. It fights bacteria, viruses, and cancers. And the herb also decreases inflammational cytokines, which is what is happening with people dying from COVID. It's upper respiratory tract infection and inflammation. And we know it also increases natural killer cells, which helps defend against tumors and a number of pathogens. It promotes the production of native T cells and B cells that helps fight pathogens. It supports proper immune function through anti-inflammatory activities. It increases the activity of dendritic cells, which help activate the T cells. And it decreases harmful pro-inflammatory cytokine interleukin-6. So it's just terrific. And also, among the most beneficial compounds in Sustanci are polysaccharides and a class of polyphenols that are unique. They're the glycosides, which include healing capacity. So just more a little in-depth on two topics that we don't generally think about at this time. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to play a short clip of Tucker Carlson making some statements that are extremely relevant, and then I'll give my commentary, and then I'm going to ask people in the audience to send Tucker Carlson some information. Please send it politely. Our goal is to see if he would be willing to review the information that is fully documented, that is accurate, it is scholarly. There's no bias, there's no agenda except telling the truth about COVID and vaccines. So when we come back, first we'll hear what he discovered when he did his research on social distancing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
That's how badly human beings need to be close to one another. So when they told us to stay far apart from each other last spring in the name of public health, it was an enormous sacrifice, whether or not we understood it at the time. But because this was a trusting and law-abiding country, we obeyed that order. We barely grumbled about it. We assumed they knew best. 6 feet from each other. That was social distancing. It was the law, and most of us followed that law. But where did that law come from? Who did the scientific research that determined 6 feet was the safest distance apart from other people that you could be? Somebody should have asked that question last spring. But as far as we know, nobody did ask it. It turns out the research that formed the basis of that law came from a German hygienist called Karl Pflug. It was Pflug who decided that 6 foot separations were necessary to slow the spread of pathogens. The CDC went with Pflug's judgment. What the CDC didn't tell us was that Karl Pflug had been dead for 100 years. His research on social distancing was published in the 19th century, before most Americans had electricity or indoor plumbing. So why is that research still guiding public health policy in this country in 2021? It's a good question. Experts don't seem to have a good answer. Last year, one of the top aerosol scientists in Australia, a woman called Lydia Morosca, likened social distancing regulations to a cult ritual. Quote, "The dogma was born. Like any dogma, it's extremely difficult to change people's minds and change the dogmas. So dogma posing as science, it was all just faith-based and it had massive consequences. Millions of American school children have not been educated for a year because the CDC turned century-old German theories about tuberculosis into a kind of modern state-enforced religious faith. Think about that. It's enough to make you feel sick. Yes, our authorities are just that mediocre. But the most infuriating part of it all is not that they were wrong, but that they won't admit they were wrong and apologize for it. Watch Tony Fauci pretend as if 6 feet apart were some kind of unquestioned, universally recognized physics principle like gravity or photosynthesis. 6 feet apart. Everyone knows that. It's just science.
And in everything on here, one way or the other, points to physical separation, whether it's no crowds, whether it's 6 feet. Go out, wear a mask, stay 6 feet away from anyone. When you're outside, stay at least 6 feet apart from someone. I think if you stay 6 feet apart with masks, you can do whatever it is that you need to do. Every aspect of that ending the COVID outbreak in 30 days has some aspect of it of physical separation, whether that's avoiding crowds, whether that's staying 6 feet away from people.
If you stay 6 feet apart with masks, you can do whatever it is you need to do. Of course, it sounded so simple. And that's why every elevator you get into, every airport check-in line you see, every convenience store has on the floor 6 feet apart on stickers. It's not hard. Just change every part of your life, every interaction you have with another human being, and it's totally fine. It's not a big deal. In the state of Washington, high schools tried their best to comply with Anthony Fauci's pronouncements. Here's how one school adapted its band practice to conform to German germ research from the 1890s.
Wenatchee High School finding a socially distanced solution to get the band back together. These so-called pods set up in the band and choir rooms, individual students getting inside, zipping themselves in, and then removing their masks to play their instruments or to sing.
Getting less oxygen is good for you. So get inside your little plastic pod like freeze-dried people. It's dystopian. The Morning Show presented it in some chirpy way like, isn't this great? It's not great. It's horrifying. But the kids had no choice. The science was settled. That's what we were told. Well, it was settled until last Wednesday when the Journal of Clinical Infectious Diseases found that the law of 6 foot social distancing isn't actually real. It's not a law. It was a guess and it's wrong. Researchers looked at coronavirus case rates in the state of Massachusetts, the school districts there, schools that required 6 foot social distancing, and compared those with school districts that required only 3 feet of social distancing. And there were some. Researchers found there was no statistically significant difference in coronavirus cases between the two. And it wasn't just for students. It was also true for adult staff members. The study also controlled for coronavirus rates in the surrounding communities. It was not shoddy research. It was real. And here's the conclusion, quote, lower physical distancing policies can be adopted in school settings with masking mandates without negatively impacting student or staff safety, end quote. So this has massive implications, but mostly for people like Tony Fauci, people who spent the last year assuring everyone that the science is clear. So if you had spent the last year saying that, insisting that 19th century German hygiene research was the last word on social distancing, if you'd staked your rapidly diminishing credibility on that fact, wouldn't you apologize now that the fact turns out to be a lie? But Tony Fauci didn't apologize for the fake science he has imposed on the entire country. He just nodded and kept going.
There's this new study from researchers in Massachusetts just out this week. It found no significant difference in coronavirus spreading in schools where there was 6 feet of distancing versus 3 feet of distancing. But that six-foot requirement, that's one of the main...
All right, listen to what we're hearing now. If the social distancing worked, then we wouldn't need the vaccines. If the masks worked, we wouldn't need social distancing. If wearing masks and social distancing worked, then we wouldn't have to be going back to another quarantine, the fourth in the United States. So you see, we've been given misinformation. Now, the motivation behind that misinformation, I cannot tell you. But let me just give you an example of why this is so important. Because virtually everything they have said, we could show you the opposite is true. Example, they say that we have new cases, all over the world cases, and those cases are immediately equated with disease. And disease means you have to medicate those people, hospitalize those people, or those people must get the vaccine. Now we have a counterpoint saying, and from mainstream physicians, saying that if you have already contracted COVID, and you probably wouldn't even know it for the majority of people, you might have had a few days feeling like you had the flu or a cold, but you recovered if you're young and healthy, then you should not have the vaccine. It can actually hurt you. It can compromise your immune system, causing a super or hyper autoimmune condition. We weren't told that. We were told that if you had the vaccine, you'll be protected. In fact, the former director of the Food and Drug Administration said recently that if you get your vaccines, then you're protected and you can go back to normal. Not true. In no study, not a single study of the three currently used experimental vaccines, did they test to see whether the COVID vaccine would protect you from developing the COVID virus. It was never tested. Therefore, they cannot make that statement, yet the whole media and everyone else, including Fauci, is making that. Also, if you have the virus and you've been vaccinated, it was not shown that it can prevent you from spreading it to other people. Therefore, you could come home and say, hey, I just got my vaccine, and we're all safe now. Not true. They never tested it for that. Therefore, you could spread the COVID to anyone else in a close environment. We're also showing that those who were in a controlled small environment, an apartment, a house, were spread their greatest spreaders. We also showed that asymptomatic spreaders in closed environments, people themselves either had a delayed response or no response, and yet they were able to shed enough virus that other people who were older and vulnerable and had comorbidities could be infected. So the last thing we should have done is put everybody into the same environment. We should have only allowed those people who were most at risk to have a different environment. But even then, we did not talk about preventing the disease, which we can with cancer and heart disease and diabetes by lifestyle modification. There should have been a national Marshall Program to encourage people to a healthier diet, to help set up free clinics around the United States, especially in poor neighborhoods where people are more susceptible to buying inexpensive food, meaning fast foods, and then ending up with comorbidities, including obesity, heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, making you far more susceptible to COVID. We did just the opposite. Nobody stopped any of the advertisement on television or had a warning, not the Surgeon General, not Anthony Fauci or anyone else. So we kept getting sicker. We were averaging 2 pounds per person per month. So the average person gained about 30 pounds. That makes them far more susceptible to at least 4 other killer diseases. So we did just the opposite of what the science showed. We could have taken vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, selenium, and that would have helped build up our immune system. And the science actually shows that. That's in the peer-reviewed literature. Anyone listening right now can go to PubMed, look under Library of Medicine, that's the official repository of all considered legitimate science, and see for yourself. But we did not do that. To the contrary, we didn't tell people you could prevent anything. You just stay at home till your lips turn blue, you lose your taste, and you end up with a cough or fever, then go to the hospital. That is without question, in my personal opinion, the most irresponsible public health message in the history of the United States. That represents, in my opinion, crimes against humanity because it's not misguided. These people are far too educated, far too knowledgeable, far too intelligent on the issue to miss the 2 steps. A, let's prevent this thing in the first place, and B, let us make sure that we're doing the right thing through public health science. And we did neither. But then there's a 3rd strike against the entire COVID establishment. And that is, we have at least 5 medications, 5, even 60 Minutes mentioned one, that are safe to use, safer than aspirin, including the probably the most widely used is ivermectin at small doses and can be used preventatively in 3 milligrams. And even to stop an attack, 15 milligrams. 1 or 2 days, 3 at the most, in most cases, you've stopped it. But we didn't. We condemned it. Now, that was an asserted malice aforethought plan, a conspiracy, because it engaged many people to take down anything that competed with Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates and the World Health Organizations and Big Pharma's hidden agenda. Make as much profit, get as much control, and then take the world, once they're that conditioned and propagandized and fearful, take them into the next stage, which is the Great Reset. So these people knew that the science supported ivermectin, clinical experience supported, as well as hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc. There are now hundreds of studies on that, yet the New York Times led the charge in condemning these off-patent. Why would you spend $50 for a month's supply of ivermectin when you can spend $3,200 for a single treatment of one of their Anthony Fauci-sponsored drugs? So it's not even – it's their corruption is so transparent that it's embarrassing. And yet no one in the media would call them out, so individual doctors call them out. Let me give an example. One of the leading scientists in the United States, and this is a saying something, challenged the World Health Organization, saying that you're giving disinformation. And this is 26 scientists, and they wrote a letter saying, stop your report. Why? Because all of the mainstream media were looking at the report saying, yeah, there's a World Health Organization mission, went over to China, did their work, and found that the virus is coming from natural sources. Lies. All lies. Because the person heading the World Health Organization himself received $200 million from the military, $7 million from Anthony Fauci to do in his own labs, and later at the University of North Carolina, in complete contradiction to Barack Obama's stopping with a moratorium all research on gain of function, meaning making a pathogen more pathological. As a result, the person who did this and who actually was over at the Wuhan lab, he was the one who was doing the study. And it was a farce. He didn't do any real intrinsic investigation, so guess who called him out? And by the way, the person calling him out is no just regular scientist. This is Professor Richard Ebright, E-B-R-I-G-H-T, a molecular biologist at Rutgers University. He is one of the 26 signatories, and he has a phenomenal background, a pedigree in science. He is as orthodox as you get. All these 26 are pro-vaccine people. Mind you, when pro-vaccine, pro-medicine, pro-orthodox approaches to everything, when they stand up and they risk their reputation, they risk their livelihood, they risk even their tenured positions by saying, you're giving disinformation. Now, we have posted their letter up on PRN.fm. And in there, you'll see the questions that are addressed. And I'll give you one example. When it says, do you believe that this virus, COVID virus 19, or SARS-2, did it evolve naturally? No. And then there was another scientist who said the probability of this coming from the Wuhan lab being genetically engineered is 99.98% probable. Well, you don't get stronger than that. All right? This is strong stuff. You've got a lot of really heavyweight people from all over the world signing this letter. When was the last time you heard of this? When? In my whole career, I haven't heard of this. When orthodox people, not alternative doctors, when orthodox scientists, the people who sit at the table, the people who make the decisions, the people who are doing this cutting-edge research, when they say you are wrong, wow. But then again, over 55,000 scientists and physicians have signed the Great Barrington petition showing that we've got a lot of this wrong, including the lockdowns, the quarantining. So now it's the wall is breached. I believe within the next 12 months, all of this will become public knowledge. But we have to support these very brave people. And this is just on. This is just them saying this. These 26 top scientists in the United States, and around the world, they're saying, "You got it wrong. You know, this is a human-made, biologically constructed virus. Because if you show that, then you have to ask a simple question: Who did it? Well, that's easy. Go right back to Anthony Fauci. He's personally responsible because he's the one who was funding it. We have all the money trails. We have the money to showing which lab he sent. We have, and this was all after it had been banned, and the gain of research had been going on earlier. And then we show that the person that he works with took it over and continued in spite of a ban on it in the United States at the Wuhan lab. So now, listen to what I said a couple of weeks ago. What an irony if the person who created COVID was the person now running the war against COVID, and that would be the greatest cover-up in history. Think of the lies lost. But we go a little further on that. And the further we go, the worse it gets. I'll give you an example. By the way, I have the full open letter. It's called Call for Full and Unrestricted and International Forensic Investigation of the Origins of COVID-19, March 4th, 2021. And then it goes into this in great depth and shows why the current investigation was a whitewash, should not be trusted, not be believed. So now these are heavyweights, and they're saying exactly what a proper investigation would do, and then the conclusions reached. This is going to challenge the World Health Organization. This is going to challenge Anthony Fauci, but it won't challenge anything if the public is not behind it and demanding congressional investigations. This needs to have congressional investigation. This needs to have an independent investigation because this is a big deal. You have to write your legislators. You have to let them know how bad this is. And by the way, one of the newest studies just out this week showed that children are dying from suicide. More children are dying from suicide than COVID. Wouldn't that cause immediately the brakes to come on how we're treating children, keeping quarantine? First, now we can prove that they're not the spreaders. There's all the scientific evidence in the world shows that there is a 99.9% chance that they're not going to succumb. They are healthy, their immune systems are healthier, and yet these same children would die if it was the normal, many of them would die if it was normal flu season. But with COVID, it does not hold the deadly outcome that other virions do. So why aren't they in school? And think of all the children who've died by suicide. And yet that doesn't seem to bother anyone in official positions. And unfortunately, and shame on the unions, I'm pro-union all the way, but by God, when you've got a union that's keeping kids out of school, supposedly for the kids' safety and the teacher's safety, that's nonsense, absolute nonsense. There's so many ways that kids could go back to school. Since the social distancing is not the issue, the spreadability is not the issue, and this is just one more way for people to manipulate the system. So write your legislator requesting, politely requesting an official investigation of the investigation of the origins of the Wuhan virus, because once that comes out, everything else collapses. And finally, I want to say hello to the people who are doing the right thing. Now, I ask you to send Tucker Carlson information, because everyone he's had on are pro-vaccines. They've been over backward praising vaccines. On GaryNall.com, I have an area called articles. Under the articles, I have COVID articles. Send them all of them. The information in these articles, he's never discussed. And this is all fully documented, vetted, scholarship vetted, and legally vetted. Secondly, I have vaccine articles. There's over 55. Send them these articles. Again, this will just completely deconstruct his myth that somehow smallpox was cured by Jenner and his, you know, cowpox vaccine. That's a total lie. That polio was cured because of a vaccine, that's also a lie. They just simply relabeled it as a different form of paralysis, a flaccid cell paralysis, muscular paralysis, and even measles. In fact, measles was gone 99% before the first vaccine for measles was even invented. But all of this is fully documented, good scholarship. Thousands and thousands of hours went into preparing this. And just say, and this is why I ask to be polite, because he has the most popular television show on cable, period. And of all backgrounds, it's not just some right-wing conservative audience. And just say, would you entertain reading and reviewing information that could allow you a different set of guests, a different set of discussions concerning COVID? Then I have a group of articles on the environment. And just ask him, would he review these articles? And we will send him a copy of three documentaries I've done on the environment, including my latest one, which is the most winning documentary in world history. In fact, we just posted the awards up there today. And it's called Last Call for Tomorrow. We look forward to premiering it shortly here. But let him read the articles we've done on the environment. Again, they're all high-level scholarship, all accurate, all footnoted. Let him watch the films and then see if he is not open to changing his mind on the causes of climate change and human and industrial activity being the precipitating factor. Because right now he is a climate change denier. I disagree with Tucker Carlson on probably 70% of the issues, and I hold a different point of view. But then again, he does have the courage to get some things right. And the only person I know on Fox that gets it right, and on this case, let's give him the benefit of a doubt. Who knows what will happen when you open someone's mind? Also, I want to thank some people in the audience who have gone out of their way to write letters to their legislators and let the legislators know that, hey, let's do proper research. Just stop talking about the same thing over and over again, because that's all that's happening right now. Same people over and over again keep going to the media and promoting lies. We need truth to be a part of what is discussed, and that's just not in the offering right now. Okay, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking with a physician who has treated a lot of children. I mean, thousands of children. He's testified under oath. He has impeccable background. And he is going to take on some of the questions. He doesn't, and none of my guests ever know my questions, by the way. And I don't throw softball questions. And let's see what he has to say to defend his position and why he is concerned about the legitimacy of all these vaccines. And now they're going towards your, they're going after your kids, by the way. They're going after your children. They're wanting to do testing on children, and with that, they're going to try to bring out a whole new group of COVID vaccines for children as young as 6 months of age. To me, that is criminal. We should not allow this to exist, and we do not have the pediatricians speaking up and defending the children, which is their first obligation, but they've failed that. So we'll see what our guest has to say on all this in a moment. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nolan. We are here to serve everyone. We are not political, not ideological. There is no religion. There's no body politic that we share. We simply look for the truth. We respect all life. We find all life sacred. Until a person chooses not to use their life in a sacred way, then that's up to them. But we're not here to condemn anyone. In fact, we're here to challenge the excesses, the misdemeanors, and the crimes against humanity by the government and corporate America. Dr. Lawrence Palevsky, Palevsky, practicing in New York City, is a board-certified pediatrician who utilizes a more holistic approach to children's wellness and illness. And over the years, he has lectured and spoken extensively about vaccine risks and vaccine adverse reactions, including autism spectrum disorders and neurological damage. He received his medical degree from New York University School of Medicine, completed a three-year pediatric residency at Mount Sinai, a hospital in New York City, and since 1991, his clinical experience includes working with pediatric emergency and intensive care medicine, inpatient, outpatient, pediatric medicine, etc. And his website is northpointwellnesscenter.com. Nice to have you with us again, Lawrence.
Hi, Gary. Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me today.
About 10 years ago, Moderna announced it would, 10 days ago, excuse me, Moderna announced it will begin trials using its experimental RNA vaccine on children as young as 6 months old. Pfizer has already begun its RNA vaccine trials with teens starting at 12 years. Johnson & Johnson has announced it will be doing the same with its engineered adenovirus vector vaccine, and its trial will begin shortly and include infants. AstraZeneca is enrolling kids between 6 and 12 years for its pediatric COVID vaccine trial. So all of the primary COVID vaccine players are now moving their COVID vaccines into the pediatric world. Obviously, our greatest worry is that all of these vaccines are still experimental. The companies are still collating data and conducting follow-up on adults who participated in their original trials. And now the pharmaceutical shock troops are rushing to get into the pediatric market. Also, there is no consensual evidence to warrant vaccinating children for SARS-2 because of their immunity and being asymptomatic if infected. From the statistics I've read, the virus is less worrisome for children compared to the annual flu. So please begin by providing your overview of this rush for pediatric COVID vaccines, all supported by Anthony Fauci and funded in no small measure by the Gates people and Anthony Fauci's National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. And so we're going to ask the larger question, what is the evidence against this being warranted? One caveat that is not in any of the media, but we will report it. Today, the latest from the European database of suspected drug reactions reported in Eurovigilance is tracking the injuries and deaths. In Europe, 3,964 dead, 162,610 injured. And we also know that only about from 1% to a maximum of 10%, and the more accurate number is closer to 1%, is actually reported. So if you're saying that you could then multiply that by 100, you're looking at a serious amount of deaths and millions of injuries. The same is true in the United States. We're approaching 2,000 dead, and no one seems to be concerned as if, well, that's just for the greater good. Well, who's greater good? The people are now paralyzed? And haven't we seen this before with Gardasil and other vaccines, the MMR vaccine and the DPT vaccine before that? And the polio vaccine, have we learned nothing about the epidemiology and science of promising something that cannot be shown that it actually is delivered through real science? The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary. Great way to start. I want to start with the idea that the word vaccine is a misnomer. It's unfortunate that people are calling this a vaccine, because it cannot be labeled as a vaccine. A vaccine is known to help us produce antibodies against a virus or bacteria. A vaccine is supposed to give us immunity. It's supposed to protect us from disease against those viruses and bacteria that we vaccinate against. It's supposed to reduce the incidence of death, and it's supposed to reduce the transmission of the virus or bacteria from one person to the next. The technology that's being used in all four of the vaccines, so-called vaccines that you named, the technology has never been used before in humans. So from the perspective of a precedence or history, we have no idea if this injection operates as a vaccine. What's interesting is that people hear the word vaccine and they automatically believe that we're being saved, we're being rescued, the authorities have our back, and we're going to be protected against disease. when in fact the injections do not protect us against the virus at all. There's nothing in the injection that is specific to protect us against a SARS-CoV-2 viral infection. What's in the injection is a new technology that's never been used before. There's no proof that it gives us immunity to a virus or bacteria. There's no proof that it protects us against disease. There's no proof that it will protect us against death. And there's no proof that it will reduce the transmission of the virus from one person to the next. And yet people are lining up because the powers that be, the authorities, have said this is a vaccine. But it's not. Not only has the technology never been proven to operate as a vaccine, but the ingredients in the injection have never been studied for safety. There are ingredients in there that are for the first time being used in what is so-called a vaccine, and there's no safety data. In fact, the bigger concern is the large degree of anaphylactic reactions that we may see due to one or more of the chemicals in the injection, like polyethylene glycol and polysorbate 80. The messenger RNA, which is the technology that's being used that has never been used in vaccines before, has not been studied for safety. We don't know if it becomes a part of our permanent genetics. And when the messenger RNA is inserted into the cell, it is supposed to produce a spike protein. And I think the listeners need to know that this is a synthetic spike protein. This is not the original so-called spike protein of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. In order for manufacturers to patent a product, they must man-make it because they cannot patent something that naturally occurs in nature. So the spike protein is synthetic. It's a synthetic spike protein that has been manipulated in the lab in order to keep it stable so that it can enter the cell. And that messenger RNA is going to teach the cell to make a synthetic spike protein. There is no data. There are no data to show whether the cells stop producing that messenger RNA spike protein or not. And there are no data to show whether or not that messenger RNA spike protein genetic material gets into the permanent parts of our genes and gets transmitted from one person to the next when people reproduce or have sexual intercourse. Interestingly enough, during the phase one trial of one of the injections, people were warned not to have sexual intercourse in the first month after they got the injection. So my question is, what did they know that they're not telling us? But this messenger RNA spike protein is supposed to continue to produce in the cells, and that will influence the body's immune system to produce antibodies against the spike protein. Again, it's a synthetic spike protein. Unfortunately, there's no evidence as to whether or not the immune system will ever turn off the production of those antibodies. And we're made to believe that those antibodies are just going to be specific to a SARS-CoV-2 virus. And there's no evidence that that antibody is specific to attack the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And there is some evidence that that antibody against the spike protein will cross-react with many antigens, many proteins already embedded in the body, in the mitochondria, in the brain, in the heart, in the lungs, and in the liver, and in the male and female reproductive systems. And so there's no safety data as to whether or not this antibody is going to hurt us more than the actual so-called viral illness itself. And people, again, are walking around saying, we're going to be protected against a virus, when there's really no evidence that this injection will give us immunity against the SARS-CoV-2 virus or will even protect us against the actual SARS-CoV-2 infection. Even the authorities have said, we don't know if this will give you immunity against the SARS-CoV-2 infection, and we don't know if this will protect you from getting a SARS-CoV-2 infection. It may reduce your symptoms. And over the last year, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of physicians who have taken care of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of patients who have successfully been treated with the symptoms of COVID-19 with medicines, nutrients, nutraceuticals, supplements, ozone, hyperbarics, iodine, and many other interventions that have prevented them from dying and actually prevented them from getting the disease in the first place. Now, children have not been shown to even develop this illness, and the morbidity and mortality for children is close to 0%. The death rates for children getting COVID-19 symptoms is as close to 0% as you can get. And there's never been any study to show that children are the carriers or the transmitters of this so-called virus. And so why would we be injecting this material into children when we don't even know if it'll stop the transmission of the so-called virus, let alone give you immunity to the so-called virus? And there's no safety data around this injection. And in fact, as you and your listeners probably already know, the reports of death around the world are not making it into the mainstream media. And the reports of morbidity, sequelae, deep medical problems that people are having after this injection are being kept from the mainstream media. I've actually heard people say to me, well, Dr. Pilevsky, if people were really dying or people were really having bad outcomes from this injection, they would tell us. And I think, there's a wonderful naivete in that statement because, I mean, we know going all the way back to the Dodge Pinto, they knew that the gas tank blew up when the car was hit from behind. And they knew that they could put a $15 mechanism into the gas tank to stop the car from blowing up. But they chose to pay the damages that they would have to pay if they got caught rather than pay the $15 per car to actually fix the problem so that people wouldn't die. So this devotion, this actual worshiping of the authority that they would protect us if something were really bad is going to be as much of a death to us as the actual injection itself.
I appreciate that overview. Thank you. These vaccines should be questioned, in my opinion, as to whether they properly can be defined as vaccines or whether, as more and more concern to the issue is being addressed, in the case of Moderna's and Pfizer's vaccines, are these actually gene therapy drugs? It was obvious to understand why characterizing these drugs as vaccines is lucrative. And it's the trouble is, these vaccines should be listed, in my opinion, as drugs, no different than any other kind of category, to denote their level of safety based upon clinical trials conducted, including animal trials, and a lot of this has been bypassed. For example, whether safety was tested in pregnant women that you mentioned, and yet now we're seeing miscarriages in a lot of the women who've taken the vaccine, a statistically high significant number in one example. And whether they were tested as possibly being carcinogenic. And having a drug approved as a vaccine permits companies to leap over regulatory hurdles, apply for emergency use, and they're protected from lawsuits for injuries and deaths. However, at the technical level, why should we not consider these drugs as drugs rather than vaccines?
Well, it's interesting because, as I understand it, the Moderna patent labels this injection as gene therapy, but they didn't apply for a vaccine status. They applied for gene therapy. And, again, this is where we have a real cognitive dissonance. The public hears the word vaccine and, the savior, rescuer, we're going to be okay now, comes out without any questioning or any assessment of what it is that they're doing. I mean, we have precedents that vaccine studies take 7, 10, 15 years of evaluation. And in the current state of affairs, we're injecting this material into the body rather quickly without understanding if it's actually going to do any of what a vaccine is supposed to do.
Lawrence, just hold your thoughts for 1 second. I just want to say goodbye to our WBA audience. You're going to be broken away here to hear the news, but we'll continue on PRN.FM to the top of the hour. Please continue, Lawrence.
Thank you. The interesting thing is that the use of this injection is only in effect because of the emergency use authorization. This is an experimental injection. There's no approval of it. There's no licensure of it. And through the emergency use authorization, the government can basically implement the injection without any real safety data or any real study in the event that they're unable to come up with any treatments or any preventions for the actual illness. And that's why all the doctors and all the patients around the world who have benefited from hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, hyperbarics, vitamin C, vitamin D, magnesium, iodine, Chinese medicine, ozone therapy, chaga mushrooms. I mean, the list goes on. Inhaled budesonide. All the people who benefited from these treatments, glutathione, vitamin C, have all been censored. Because if this information actually came to light, then you could not utilize the emergency use authorization. You could not implement an experimental injection. And the people just think that this is a good thing. And unfortunately, we are being killed. And you're right. Not only are women having miscarriages and stillborns, but there's a report that I just recently heard about a 5-month-old baby who was being breastfed by his mom, who was a healthy baby. And the mom got the second injection of one of the mRNA injections. And the baby within 24 hours developed a condition called thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura, otherwise known as TTP, which is a blood disorder that leads to blood clots forming in small blood vessels. And within 48 hours, the kid had low platelet count, low red blood cells, and then died. And, you know, as we know in society, when something like that happens, the authorities will tell you it was a coincidence. It had nothing to do with the injection. When in fact, healthy babies don't all of a sudden develop TTP out of nowhere. And so, again, this information is being squelched. More than 2/3 of the deaths in this country that have come from the injection have happened within 48 hours of having received it. And the authorities unanimously claim, oh, it couldn't be from the injection. It must be from something else. And the public buys it. The public buys it. They don't sit there and question the validity of the information. And I am worried about the children very much.
Okay, I'm concerned. Many people in this audience are concerned about what would happen under normal vaccine adverse reactions. We've seen this, the severe allergic reactions, anaphylaxis shock, cardiovascular risk, all forms of immune challenges. And the question is, will we be seeing this in these infants and toddlers if they start getting vaccinated? And Moderna's and Pfizer's RNA, they contain polyethylene glycol, or PEG. That's a lipid molecule that's being used as an adjuvant. There are also a couple of other lipids being used, but it seems that the PEG may be the most dangerous because a person can develop an anti-PEG antibodies. So, and then you have the long-term effects of an engineered modified RNA that encodes the virus's a glycoprotein. So could you address what we're not told? For example, Johnson's & Johnson's vaccine is 2-hydroxypropyl-beta-cyclodextrin, which according to the manufacturer's data has been very poorly tested for biological safety. It's a combustible, and there are warnings if inhaled, if it gets on the skin. We did find that a study with anesthetic dogs that this ingredient contributed to an increased renal arterial resistance and decreased renal blood flow at all doses. So none of this is being discussed. None of this is being told to the person before they get their vaccines.
Right. Well, you know, the informed consent principle is not being adhered to with this injection. And as you know, the informed consent principle is not adhered to pretty much with any of the injections that we give to children and adults. But again, there's blind faith that, you know, everything has been done on the up and up and all these chemicals have been tested. As you said, the polyethylene glycol has never been used in injections in children or adults before. And the anaphylactic potential is very, very great. But around the polyethylene glycol is something else called a lipid nanoparticle. And, you know, anybody who goes to PubMed can just research, well, what happens in the body when lipid nanoparticles are injected. And you'll see that there's organ damage that happens all over the body. There's evidence of male and female reproductive system failure, brain damage, heart damage, lung damage, liver damage, blood damage. And this is a chemical that is wrapped around the polyethylene glycol to cover the messenger RNA spike protein genetic information. And there's no safety data around it. The Johnson & Johnson AstraZeneca injections are not supposed to be messenger RNA, but they are human and chimpanzee adenovirus structures that are used as vectors to direct the actual spike protein into the cells. And I think their last count, there were 26 countries around the world that had pulled the injection because of the increased incidence of blood clots and the concerns around its adverse events. But even still, there were many reports that these countries will eventually reinstate the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca injections soon. But there's no safety profiling, no biological safety profiling of any of the materials that are in the injection. And so when people hear the word safe, they automatically think that the authorities have done their proper diligence and they're going to protect us. The interesting thing that you know, you hear thrown around is that, you know, the injections are 95% effective. That's pretty much for the mRNA ones. And I think if I go back to my medical school training, an effective injection means that the body produced antibodies against the specific virus or bacteria that you're vaccinating against. And that's not been tested. There were no tests in the trials to evaluate antibody production to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And in fact, as I stated earlier, there is no antibody against the SARS-CoV-2 virus being produced with these injections. It's supposed to be simply an injection against the spike protein, and that's not specific to just a SARS-CoV-2 virus, if it is specific at all, because it is a synthetic bioweapon that's been man-made.
Well, Lawrence, to be continued, just now Pfizer vaccine was halted in Hong Kong after multiple defects were reported. Unfortunately, we are used as human guinea pigs. We shouldn't be seeing any of this, and we're seeing all of it, and it's after the fact. I wish people would just awaken. Thank you very much for being on today, Lawrence Pavesky, and we look forward to another in-depth conversation.
Pleasure. Thank you, Gary.
NorthPointWellnessCenter.com is his address. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.